What's going on, everybody? Welcome to our first Tuesday Coffee with John Willis from Special Operations Equipment, Jack Spierko from the Survival Hello. Podcast, and I'm Nicole Soss from Living Free in Tennessee, coming to you from the teaching kitchen that we built at the Base Camp Lodge. Super excited that this is ready to use. Is there anything going on that's top of your mind, y'all? Like anything in the world that you want to talk about today? Jack,
I was waiting for John. I was gonna let him go first. But I mean, obviously,
there's a
we're blowing shit up on the other side of the world again. And it's I think we need to come at it as we look at it in our communities from a standpoint of what does it mean to us? Not is it right, is it wrong? Because fuck, we don't have a choice. Like it's gonna happen now. It's happening. What are the long-term consequences? What are the second, third, fourth, fifth layer effects of this long-term? And that's what I don't think anybody's actually looking at. Everybody's saying, should we or shouldn't we? Well, we did, right? So you can argue about that. It can make you feel good. You can intellectually masturbate all you want about, well, what if we didn't? But we did. So now what do we do? And I don't mean the country militarily, because we're not going to have any say on that either. And any belief that you do is just a delusion. But what do we do in our lives to prepare for the second order effects that come from that?
Well, what do you think they are?
Well, gas is going to go up like a motherfucker straight up. Like that's going to happen quick. It's going to change the entire dynamic of our relationships or the global relationships, I guess, with China in a big way, probably more than any other thing, because we just cut off almost 20% of their total oil usage and imports because they're not getting oil from Venezuela and they're not getting oil now from Iran. And when they eventually do get oil again from Venezuela, we're going to get half the money because that's kind of the deal that Trump extorted Venezuela into. So we're getting as much money out of the oil now as Venezuela is. So that kind of changes dynamics, but that doesn't, like, if somebody did that to us, we'd be kind of pissed off and we would do something back. So exactly what, we don't know, but China's going to do something about this. They're not going to just take that lying down. And one of the most important things I think geopolitically for the United States to do right now is peel Russia off China. This doesn't really do that, does it? Russia makes lots of oil. They're the easiest country to get oil from to China that's not really interfered with and is not going to be fucked with. So we drive oil prices up. And we stick China and Russia tighter together, and Russia profits. Same time, not good for Russia. Why? Because where does all Russia's fucking cheap-ass one-direction drones come from? Iran. I don't think they have time to make freaking drones for Russia now. So you see what I mean about how this all peels together. What do you think happens, John? Where do you think it goes next?
Why do you think? Why do we think that China wasn't already getting oil from Russia?
Well, they are, but they were getting something in the neighborhood of 14% of their total imports from Iran. So there's a capacity issue.
Why, though?
Okay. Why were they buying it from Iran?
Okay.
Is that what you're asking?
Mm-hmm. Over why Russia. They, yeah, over
because
Russia.
Because it's easy to get in a boat and sail from where the oil comes out of the ground in Iran over to China.
Got it.
Much easier than get. There's no, like, there's not a Trans-Siberian pipeline into China, and that would be, I don't know that anybody's got that in them to build that. Russia's down to what, 120, 130 million people? That's a big project just to
do. We think the tariffs around. Do we think the tariffs are off of China?
Sort of. I think what they got replaced was a blanket 15% tariff on everybody on everything.
Yeah, so that was, I heard I heard a lot of people originally like that were receiving stuff from China, and then all of a sudden they'd get a bill going, hey, you owe the United States these tariffs. But that seems to have like disappeared, right? A lot of people are still buying junk that seems like it's coming from China, and there's no talk of those tariffs or the elevation in price.
So the importer pays the tariff. So the people you're talking to, I mean, are they businesses that are importing for resale? Because that's who should be paying. Okay. I don't know, man. That's kind of weird because there would be some tariff, I think. And that's what was announced. Now, what's actually being done, I don't know. What the government might do in the interim is stop charging the tariff for a time frame to deal with a potential other, like a fourth level feedback here, which is that now that the Supreme Court has said Trump can't do that, there's concern that some of the people that paid those tariffs are going to turn back around and sue the government for a rebate on what was a legitimate tariff. So if the tariff they paid was 30% and you drop the tariff to 15%, but you don't actually charge it, by the time they get around to suing the fucking government, well, the books are balanced. See how that works. Like, especially now that they're not paying any tariff, they're probably going to order they'll stockpile a bunch more shit as fast as they can in case it goes back up because they're in that reactionary mode. And so if they can bring in enough to balance it out, the government will say, you're right, you're entitled to your rebate, except we didn't charge you on this yet. So right now we owe you a dollar. We'll put it on your account.
Right.
Something like that. Like, yeah, that could be the play. I'm totally spitball guessing that.
Or you can just write it off on your taxes. They're never going to give you the money back.
Yeah, they're never going to get the money back. And that would be the other thing, right? So you can write it off in your taxes, but now there's an offset. So maybe they'll send out, like, if you're in a commission-only sales job and you get a draw plus commission and you fail spectacularly, so they fire you, that draw will all be taxable as income, even though it wasn't against the sale. Like, there's different ways that balances are carried over in taxation. So that would be an example of that.
So a lot of we're seeing all the footage of like the base where the radar dome got struck, right?
Yeah.
But then I'm also hearing 10 days prior to that, all U.S. service people were evacuated from that base. And then I've also got people saying that we don't actually use that. That radar dome was an old piece of equipment, almost like it was. It almost looks like, and I don't know, but it almost looks like you guys are allowed to hit these targets. And maybe. Then we can be all enraged about it, right? I almost feel like Putin met with Trump and said, okay, in 2 years or you can, you know, invade Ukraine and we'll act this way and you guys do this. It's almost like it's a script. We're going to close the Straits of Hormuz. And then all of a sudden we bomb all their shit and we break all their ships in half. They even launched a torpedo at one of them, sunk 9 to 11 ships.
Yeah.
But they're like, we're going to close these. Like when they announced, or at least when I had heard it announced on mainstream media, they'd already sunk the ships. Like that had already happened.
Yeah. And they're not going to tell you before they sink somebody's ship because then the person would know and they would try to move their ship out of the way of harm, right? So I love this shit with like, you didn't brief Congress. And what Hegseth said is we briefed the Gang of Eight, which is like the leadership team for national defense. And that's it because we're not telling 535 people. And he didn't say the second part, but the second part is because some of you motherfuckers will call your contacts in these other countries and leak everything. And there's certainly people in our government that would do that right now. Whether you think we should or we shouldn't, what you don't want is our people engaging targets when it's supposed to be some sort of stealth surprise attack and it's actually known exactly what's going to happen. We don't want that for our guys, unless you're sick in the fucking head, honestly. I'm not sure. I don't know that there's like this whole like you're allowed to hit these targets or whatever, because they fired something like 600 missiles since the start of the Iranians and like 12 hit something. Right. That's a pretty poor ratio. And of course, they're making a big deal out of, you know, it penetrated the defense systems or whatever. Bro, if you can knock down 572 out of 600 freaking missiles, then that's pretty good. The problem we have is, each one of those – oh, we lost John. One of those interceptors – those interceptors cost a lot more than the missiles we're knocking down with them, a lot more. And we can't make anywhere near as many as they can. And Rubio pretty much said that yesterday.
So my question is, do you think this adds to or pulls away from the unrest and division on our soil just from people being willing to go not only from protest but to violent protest here?
Maybe. I don't know. I don't. The people that are doing that, anything will do that to them. They're at a point now where, like, if Trump announced that they were going to increase the mandatory size of a jar of baby food by half an ounce, they would go to the streets and they'd be out there in 4 hours with perfectly printed signs protesting that. So I don't know that it will make it any worse. It damn sure won't make it any better. It is startling to me that the left became pro Ayatollah in a day. Like, that's even for the left as we know them today. To me, that's pretty astounding. Like, these are people that their hill to die on is the LGBTQ plus AI, whatever the hell else it is, right? And all their gender bullshit and everything. And you're talking about a regime that literally executes people for homosexuality. And yet now it's terrible that he's dead, right? I do not weep for the Ayatollah or his asshole entourage at all. I don't think we should have done this, but again, I'm always back to, but we did. So now what do we do?
Yeah, that's not a, hey, life done free is in the comments. Anyway, sure. We're tag. Hi, tag. Yeah, my problem is my default is, why are we even getting involved? What are we doing? What are we hiding here? That's the first question to ask. And what else has been coming out right before this?
I think the real thing going on here from justification in the minds of the people in the U.S. that called for it isn't the story being told. I think it is the weakening of China and Russia. And I'm betting that somewhere behind the scenes, there is a further plan to somehow peel, like I said, this kind of pushes them together right now, but there are ways that once you get done with this, you can kind of peel Russia off China. If we can do that, then that isolates China. And China is really the other lone superpower in the world today. Like, Russia isn't. People that, you know, our age and a little bit older and a little bit younger grew up at a time when the USSR was a thing. They were incredibly dominant. They were in all of our news and all of our propaganda, and they were the other nuclear power, and they were much more powerful than they are today just by how much region they controlled versus today with these independent republics that came out of the USSR when it collapsed. So they still have in their head this mighty, powerful Russian Empire, which wasn't even as powerful as you were told it was in the 70s and 80s. I mean, it was on the edge of collapse anyway. So they think that Russia is like our greatest rival, where Russia's basically like, you know, they're a third the population of the U.S. now, in a country that's vastly larger with tremendous amounts of resources they can't even utilize. But the Chinese are incredibly efficient. They have over 1 billion people. They claim to have about 2 billion. I think that number is inflated. But they have the technology, and they're really good at ripping off technology. They also are in a very far more strategically located in the world to cause problems. And we are far more tied to them from a standpoint of, like, you know, we got to be careful, like pinching off their oil supply and all. We pinch and then negotiate. Because if you just slam down on China, China's going to be like, oh, so you don't need any antibiotics.
Right.
Right?
That is the game we are playing right now.
you forget that that's where you get all your shit. And there's so many things like that that we get from China that are critical to the United States. Even when John was asking about the tariffs earlier, right? Like, yeah, but you notice, like, all those things were tariff exempt even before the whole Supreme Court shit and whatever. So this is, you can't do anything here with having some other unforeseen effect. It's like taking one of those balloons that the clowns make into animals at a kid's party, blow it all the way up, and any place you squeeze it, someplace else it expands. And I guess if you're the clown and you make the doggies and stuff, you kind of know the rules, but I think this balloon is a lot more dynamic. You're not quite sure what's going to swell up where. And there's more than one freaking balloon going on here too. So I don't know if that makes anything clear at all.
Well, I mean, it's a good discussion. I think this could actually serve to reduce some of the division that turns to violence for a time. Because okay. What's happening, your people are transfixed by we're bombing things, yeah. Right? Rather than I need to go scream about it. Unfortunately, long term, that may change. And if China does hit back with some things that hurt middle, you know, like the middle.
Mm-hmm.
Then it's just going to be screaming, right?
And that would be the goal, because that gets rid of a Republican government in 28 to a degree and completely, I mean, 26 to a degree and completely in 28, right? That's at least what the move would be, because, again, you're squeezing and trying to make that balloon pop up, but you don't know what is exactly going to be the result. So the other side of it would be, though, and I said this yesterday, but I think this is a percentile of happening at 15 to 20%. If somehow all this bombing, there is some segment, because it cannot be a popular uprising. There's not enough organization. The regime is too strong over there. And all the people that are of age like fighting age. They've never known anything but what they have, right? Most of the men of fighting age in Iran were born into this. The ones that are old, like our age, well, we were like 8, 9 years old when all that shit went down. How much do you remember accurately from them? So they're accustomed to this regime that we can't get our hands around how anybody would want to live that way. So there's a certain amount of Stockholm syndrome, I guess is what I'm saying. So, but if there is some contingent within the Iranian military that finally goes, look, there's not going to be fucking dick left, and they rise up with some sort of coup, they reach out to the U.S. government and say, look, we're in charge now. We want to work with you. We'll capitulate on some of these other things. And the U.S. pushes back with, you know, we need to see some movement in human rights and stuff like that. And you get something as little as a new government and women can go outside without wearing a fucking hijab. And that ends and that happens in 4 to 6 weeks. Trump's a fucking hero. Now, I'm not saying he is a hero. I'm saying the popular perception by the middle then. Who's done anything approaching that as a president in your lifetime?
Nobody.
So how, and then how do you, how does the left then push back against that being a bad thing if that happens? So I don't think it's going to happen, but that's one of those places where I want to be wrong. But if you, if that is actually the outcome, then what do you say? We would be better off with the Ayatollahs still in command. We would be better off if people were still being fully oppressed instead of having some oppression lifted. How do you play that then? I can see a lot of banners of, you know, Bush with the mission accomplished thing and all, but these are two different worlds and two different situations. So I'm saying if, big fucking word, shortest big word in the English language, but if that's pulled off, that will quell a lot of the objection in the United States, except for the people that it won't matter. There are people. It will not matter what either, if it could be either side too. It doesn't matter what they do. Everything is bad. Everything's wrong. Trump came out and cured cancer. They'd say he's putting doctors out of business. And you know they would, right? That's.
Or they would say that it was fake news.
Fake news. It didn't happen. You know, I mean.
Well, they're already saying that. Like every, like friendly fire shot down the F-15s. The other side is reporting that Iran shot them down. Like,
yeah.
It, like they
and Kuwait
keep
even like whoops.
Yeah, right? You have.
They were sunk, shot down over Kuwait.
They sunk a U.S. carrier. There's all kinds of YouTube channels
on the left,
like actually reporting that bullshit.
Yeah. Now you got to see this one, John. You'll love it. Y'all talk for a second. I'm gonna find this.
Yeah.
And,
well,
and what's left, right? They overthrow all of this. Somebody steps in. Are women going to be walking around, you know, with their faces out? And do they want that, right? You have the younger ones that think that want that because they know it from social media or whatever. But like you said, most of the people in charge over there, they grew up and everybody else grew up in that. The guys that remember, the people that are left over from when was it, the 70s, when Iran was beautiful and there were ski resorts and people came from around the world to vacation there. Most of those people that remember that, they're very, very old.
Yeah, they're 70 and up. Because, you know, you would have to be to really remember it well. At least in your late teens, I would think, right? To really get it, to really grok it. So then you're looking at people that are like 68 up to 80. And you don't have, I know it might be wrong to say it, but you don't have any power at that point.
Yeah.
Where?
Okay, here's a viewpoint from, no, that's not. Hold on. Viewpoint from Ed. If U.S. can control enough oil, we improve our negotiating position for strategic Chinese resources and products.
Oh, they
so did we go back to the oil wars? Have we ever left them?
Yeah,
I don't think we have.
Yeah,
we've never been out of the oil wars.
Okay, so I have to do this now with only a fragment of it because the person that made the post was so shamed that they took the post down. But there was a picture posted on X and there was all kinds of rah-rah cheerleaders by the retards about how they sunk this this carrier, or at least they damaged it seriously. And there was a picture of this carrier that was supposed to be the Lincoln in flames. And not only did it have the wrong ship number on it to be the Lincoln, and there was things like the plane is sitting in the middle of the flames and it's just sitting there and it's not burning either. But if you actually, all you had to do was look, and if you look right there, right, at the corner of the image, it literally said made with AI on the picture. They didn't even crop it off. And yet there was a tremendous number of special people ranting and raving about how, see, the U.S. is finding out that Iran's not to be messed with or whatever. And when somebody would point out, dude, that's AI, they were like, that's fake news. Like, and that's the level of lack of intellectual debate we're at. Like, we have just, like, that is like, you're stupid, not you're dumber. I mean, it's like kids on a kindergarten playground talking smack to each other. Like, where they're not, you know, before you're old enough to be good at it. Like, that's what these people sound like as supposed grown adults.
Do you remember in high school, I don't know if everybody had this experience, but I know in social studies or history classes, we would have debate day and they would assign us a topic. And then you would come in and they would assign you your position. So you had to come in prepared to argue either side. I wonder what it would be like if we could just start setting up debates online like that on just like stupid topics to start with to reteach people those skills. Because
yeah, you can't do
it's like we lost the capacity to ask, but what does the other side get and what does the other side think? And are they gonna, like, is there basis in that?
Yeah, it would have to be things that are opinion focused and not politically contentious, kind of to start
like
that out.
Delicious.
Where a person could see themselves taking the opposite side of what they believe. Because right now if you asked somebody on the left to debate why trans people shouldn't be in sports, that's going to be like that right there is a mental shutdown. And
yeah,
if you ask somebody on the right to say why they should, that's not happening either.
Like handwriting things is better than typing it or something like.
Yeah. That would be a good one because should we have taken away the extra space after the period in typing? Because
them fighting words, Jack.
I hate that. Right.
Here's how you edit Jack's book: find and replace space.
Well, the formatting guy, he does that automatically.
He does that.
I don't know how I get it or not. When he pulls it into his system to do all the formatting, it immediately just does that. It puts everything into block text and it takes out the extra spaces. But
did you see that?
I typed in that way.
Did you see the footage of when the F-15 pilot had ejected, the guys coming up to him, the dude had like a stick or something and was going to like swing at him. And as soon as that pilot said, I'm American, they completely defused. Like who did they think was flying that eagle? Did they think that was an Israeli pilot? And they were going to knock that dude out. And then as soon as they heard, cause that's what it looked like.
Yeah. Or were they sophisticated enough to even recognize the aircraft?
Yeah, maybe.
Right. Maybe they were just, they saw it go down. They went out there and for all they knew, it was Iranian. Cause
maybe.
They did. Like, yeah, I saw that. And then of course there was people on the left to try to spin it of the Kuwaitis hate us. Cause they just cut it off before the part that you're talking about, John, like where they realized it was an American, where he's like, thank you for helping us and shit. Yeah. Yeah. And so
does everybody need to start triple spacing every email to Jack? He'd be able to read it better if he did that.
Double. But the big thing with the emails, I don't care if you, the period in your email, you type how you want. I'm just not doing it.
The block of text in all caps.
You have got to use paragraph breaks if you fucking communicate with me in text online. Whether it's an email, whether it's a post, whatever. When I get this, like this block of fucking text with no breaks in it, I just delete it. I can't. I'm not reading that. I don't know what the fuck you're trying to do. I don't know where you learn to write. I'm not a perfect writer, but geez, what is that?
So the rules of engagement in email with you, Jack, are the rules of engagement basically in email with anybody who is a successful business person, basically.
Correct.
If I get like this long emotional thing and there's no clear like ask at the beginning, I'm a lot less likely to read that. I mean, they teach that, like they taught that in business class in high school. It was like, ask your question first.
Yep.
And then
give me your justification.
And then, and that's all you ask people to do. And now we have more formatting options in email than we used to with typewriters. So use them.
Here's my basic rule. If in 15 seconds, I don't know what the fuck that email's about, delete. I go through hundreds of emails a day and I do look at every one. And I don't know what this is. Delete. I don't have time for it. I'm sorry. I'm not being a dick. Or how about this one? I know you get this, John. I know your time is valuable, but.
Can I ask you a question?
That's instant death.
We'll get an email. Can I ask you a question? There's no damn question.
Yes, you can.
No.
You just did.
Tell me everything I need to know in three bullet points. Cut everything else out.
Yeah. I mean, I just make your request, your statement, whatever it is, one line, hit return a couple times, print that break, and then give me the details you think you need. Because then I can pick and choose from the details, but I know what this is about. And I so I also know this. No. Sometimes that is an instant no. But that's good.
Yeah.
Because now I don't have to waste my time. Now I respect you. Next time I see you send me an email, I'm like, even though I said no to that other thing, I respect this person's capability to communicate well. And you're right, Nicole. We did learn this, not in college business courses, in freaking high school.
Yeah, so here's a, you know, Kevin Trimmer, 76. If he was born in 76, didn't have it.
He was just a little late.
Just a little late, not very late, but it was just like, here's how correspondence works.
You know? And when in 76, there's a big difference of being born like December 30th versus January 2nd of 76. That's pushing you even further toward that whole millennial cohort, even though you're technically an Xer, right?
What's up with What's up with all the missiles getting through the Iron Shield? Like, where's that Iron Shield at? Are they just out of? Are they out of munitions?
You can't stop that many. It can't be done.
They seem to stop a lot the last round.
Yeah, but you know, as you deplete, and they're also launching more. And they're doing things like they're also using these one-directional drones.
Yeah.
And I'm not really sure what's going on there, because it would seem that jamming capability should work on those, because what they've done – you know this, John. What they've done in Ukraine, they've got both sides gone to fly by wire because of jamming, right? I guess maybe these are just a larger, higher class of drone that's got more autonomy, because they're not very fast compared to aircraft and what have you.
Yeah, they're like the size of a Volkswagen Bug.
But, again, I'm back to there is all this talk about how many are getting through. It's not that many relative to the total. And most of what they're hitting is things like they're hitting buildings that hotels are in and shit. And, of course, we're making out like they're targeting that. I wonder how much of that's true because, you know, when you see these videos online, they're like, it's cluster munitions. That's not how fucking cluster munitions work. That is a rocket or a missile that has been hit and fragmented and is falling. And some of these missiles are relatively about as big as a school bus. Like, think of taking the roof off a school bus and just having the chassis of the school bus. That's about the size of some of these missiles. So if you break that into pieces and it falls down on top of, you know, people and buildings and shit, it still does a great deal of damage. You're denying them the choice of target. So I think some of the stuff where we're seeing civilians hit, is it their fault for launching the rockets and the missiles? Yes. But do we play a role in it as in when we knock those down? Because we also have now the, I can't remember what they're calling it. The Israelis have it, but we designed it, which is directed energy.
Oh, and we're getting about that.
And they're knocking out like the Hezbollah rockets and shit. Not over the target. As they're being launched, they're being knocked down before they get anywhere. But that has a limited range of about 6 miles. And to deal with that is all you need is energy. You don't run out of rockets or anti-artillery missiles with that.
Yeah. So that we had a question about that. Have you researched the use of high-energy laser weapons? Sounds like a game-changer, not running out of defense interceptors.
Yeah, they have to be line of sight, and it's about a six-mile range. That's the issue with that. So that has limited effect, especially on terminal approach. When those missiles are coming down, they're in pure free fall at that point, down to their target. So they're not only moving, they're accelerating as they move. So it's like hitting a bullet with a bullet. So when some get through, the question to ask is not why some got through, it's how do we hit so damn many? It's actually really impressive what we can do. That doesn't mean we can do everything. I think trademark names or marketing names or propaganda names like Iron Dome give the wrong impression of that.
Well, didn't we have like, what did Reagan call that?
Star Wars? Yeah, that was a big bluff. That was the greatest bluff in history, man.
Yeah.
That was a huge bluff. The Russians actually.
It's real, though. It's going to happen, and it has a cool name.
Yeah. The Russians actually tried to cut a deal with Reagan that the best thing would be if we shared the technology because it would eliminate nuclear war. And that was actually, I think they really meant it. But for Reagan, that was kind of like, fuck, what do we do now? Because we can't admit that we don't have it. So we just have to keep playing our bluff and say no. And it was the biggest head fake, man, of all time. It was it was kind of a masterful stroke of negotiation, and it strung things along long enough. The Soviet Union kept spending money they didn't have, kind of like we are now, to eventually the whole system collapsed on itself. So actually, I have some stuff we could talk about if you want to.
Okay, you want me to handle any of all of these questions?
Yeah, do the questions, and then we can go a different way.
Okay. Like, so do you all think the sleeper cells are about to get active? I think that means in the U.S.
Does he mean – oh, did he say sleeper cells?
Sleeper cells,
okay, yes. I thought you said super cells because we have tornadic potential storms coming.
That's a different topic, but different topic. That's about to hit us too, of course.
I don't know. You know, here's my question. Remember how we've been told so long that Iran has all these hackers that are super hackers, right, that are just waiting over there, and then we get America, death to America, and they're going to, like, shut down our – electrical grid and our power generation stations and get in, like, do all this damage with cyber attacks. Where's that? So sleeper cells, where's your cyber attack? Did these people have any real capability, or we've been misled?
So that's, I've also question. Been noticing that at the federal level, the people in charge of government security, like digital security, are stepping down. Like, at the same time you're asking this question, that was something that struck me that in the last few
weeks. In our country?
In our country.
Like our NSA people and shit?
Yeah, more like people in the folks overseeing cybersecurity for the federal, like, systems.
Okay. Is that because they're liberals and they don't agree with Trump? Is that because they're on the Epstein list? Like, what's the catalyst to that?
That's my question. I don't know, because I was trying to read it, and it's just like they stepped down and didn't say why.
And
they, did we?
And who is they? Is that like one dude they've weeded out? I mean, what is that?
It started, and I can't remember the person's name at the top, and now managers under are, like, plural.
My one guess there might be that we have changed how we're doing security to a point where we don't need as many people to do it anymore.
Or our lack of security. Maybe we weeded them out.
Yeah.
Well, the biggest weakness in any security of any network is human.
Mm-hmm.
It all this shit where you see these people on TV and they're like, I'm going to hack in 5 minutes. Fuck that. And I mean both directions, you know, where they have like this freaking, there's always some weird fucker that's behind the keyboard in these like crime shows and shit. That was a hacker, and then now they work for the FBI or some shit. And like, well, I can get into that. Like, and what they're getting into is like, you're fucking FBI. You could make a phone call and get a FISA warrant and have the information in 5 minutes. But they have to put that whole, like, and they just start typing and shit. Anybody that knows anything about hacking knows that's not how that works. These systems, like, you can't just, like, what are you doing, blindly guessing?
No, you're deploying, like, software you wrote.
Yes. So you generally need somebody on the other side to be stupid to get that to happen.
Yeah, key counter, or they made their password.
Inject it, like you send it to somebody who opens it. There was a very famous thing done back in the early 2000s where a company that specialized in like corporate network security told this company, I don't remember who it was, but it was a big company, like a multi-billion dollar company, we can get in your network within 3 weeks. And they didn't believe them. They said, well, we'll be in 3 weeks and we'll sit down at your conference table and we'll show you how we got in your network. And so they're like, oh, okay, fine. So they had all their guys on high alert and shit, and all they did was they put malware on a few thumb drives and tossed them into parking lots at this company.
Yep.
And a couple employees took it in and went, I wonder what's on there, and uploaded all the mal code. And so they walk in and they said, we have had no penetrations. And the guy gets the fucking laptop out, calls up the malware code, and just starts fucking with shit right in front of them. And they're like, we'll tell you how to do it. You got to sign a contract. But I'm back to, it's the person is usually the weakness. Like, it's not as easy as they make it out to be. And that includes, like, all these things where you see people, like, they hack the hospital and shit. Yeah, well, you don't think if I threw 20 freaking thumb drives in the parking lot of a hospital where I know the employee parking is, that one out of those 20 is going to take that in and plug it into a computer? And now they have shit, it looks like a phone charging cable. But it's actually got USB. And somebody would just walk into that building or office and, you know, plug that cable in, and people will leave it there because it's just a cable, but it's got code on it.
Yeah, the kid on Sean Ryan was talking about that. He showed a bunch. You can actually buy them off Amazon.
Yeah. And if you buy one that like works for like the most popular phones on the planet, you could probably leave that laying around and somebody in that office will be like, oh, free cable.
And don't forget the dating websites. I mean, just compromising through the opposite sex.
Yeah. So that's the social engineering is always a huge part of hacking too.
Like yeah.
if John is on, I don't know any of the sites, but Tinder, is that the app? Like if John's on Tinder and I can like catfish him with some chicks that are just some made up images and get a track record of him and be like, bro, I need you to do this for me or I'm going to send all these screenshots to Amanda.
Or even send real ones. You know, I mean, send real ones. I got a buddy that works for a unit and they bring these dudes in to this whole, it's a cybersecurity, it's a PSYOP program actually. And they set up, they have a Facebook that looks just like Facebook, but it's all air gapped. It's only the people involved in the program and the people on the base. And they send females in, and these are all SF dudes. They send females in and they have them in the classes and then they track the relationships that happen between them. And then at the end of the program, they're like, you guys all thought you were uncompromisable. This is all the data we got and this is how we got it. And they didn't even realize, like, none of them knew what was happening. It was not malicious, just how easy it was to compromise them just through normal conversation.
Yeah, that would be eye-opening.
Basically, that's what that means.
I mean, look at the Flock cameras getting hacked right now. How many guys are logging in and they're like, this guy's password was password.
Yeah. I used to do that all the time when we would be like doing trade shows back when I had a job. And you had to pay like it was like $200 a day for internet connection in those conventions. But you'd have people running their own networks and shit. And you just could see all the networks and you just start pulling them up one at a time. Put in password, ABC123. You know, there's like five common ones. And it would take five or six times and we would find one that would use one of those. And people say, well, you hack. I didn't really hack it. It's not hacking. It's guessing. And the other side of it is once you were on that network, you couldn't necessarily see what's on their devices, but you could use that pipe out. So, yeah, there's a lot of that, too, with people using password. What was it? Remember Spaceballs? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And they're like, that's a password an idiot has on his luggage. And then the president is like, I better change the password on my luggage or whatever, right? Like, it's still a thing. And that was, what, the 80s?
That's because nobody likes to remember passwords. And then they put more and more rules on them.
Yeah.
Which makes them less secure because people write that down.
Yeah. The guy that created the protocol for like one symbol, uppercase, whatever, and then where systems force you to change that password like every 6 months or every 90 days, said he did a terrible disservice to society. He wishes everybody would stop following that. Let people set whatever the fuck password they want because they'll remember it. And then they, as long as they don't put out there what their password is, which no matter what you do, if you do that, you have a problem anyway. And it, people just doing things like, you know, their favorite cartoon character and their date of birth and their dog's name merged together. Like, that's really hard to crack. And unless you tell somebody, nobody will know. And if you let that person have that password, but the problem there, and this is why they did all this shit, isn't that somebody's going to, like, hack John's computer, get his password, and then go, I can now use it everywhere. It's that he'll have an account with somebody. He'll use that combination. Somebody will hack that entire database, and then they'll run a cross-connect, and they'll run an algorithm that'll test every popular login and find all of them that come off of that one, and now they have access to all kinds of things. And that's risk-reward, right? Like, I don't want to hack John. I only get so much out of John. But if I can get 10,000 logins, now I got something. That can cost some shit.
Yeah, they use the same password everywhere. You got to use uppercase, lowercase, symbol, and then, you know, put all your other stuff in there.
And it's like an ever longer number of letters, and I start writing sentences expressing my frustration.
Yeah, if they did that, it would be fine. If they left you alone, though, that's the – like, have you ever – anybody have this experience? You got to log into things. So that's an incorrect password.
Okay. Reset.
Change password. You put the password in. You've already used this password. I know because I'm using it right now. And then you try a different password. You've already used this password. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have because I can remember that one, right? And you're like, you go through all the passwords you ever used, and clearly it's wrong. But that's why I use password managers. Like, I think a good encrypted password manager is the way to go.
Yeah.
Then you have different logins and that shit doesn't happen. And then it doesn't matter. It can be like ABC179 exclamation point dickhead. And it doesn't matter. You don't have to remember it.
But what happens when you lose access to that password manager, or it itself gets hacked somehow?
So I run mine off of the Start9 Embassy's private server,
so I have
access to it at all times, and good luck even seeing the server, let alone hacking into it. And then again, you're spending all this energy to get the passwords of one person, and hacker groups and shit, like, that's just not, like, there's a risk-reward ratio to everything. That's why the little minnow swims past the bass, and the bass is like, it's not worth opening my mouth for. There's not enough calories.
There's a best-selling book, I don't know if it still is, it was called What the Fuck Is My Password and Other Shit I Can't Remember. It's just, you write all your bullshit in there. It's literally like,
that's
just
a good idea.
Plus, I have a backup of that as well, so that's on a stick and that's in a safe place.
I mean, it's like keeping your seed phrases. You got your seed phrases somewhere.
Yep.
Hopefully.
Yep. Stamped into washers.
So a buddy of mine messaged me and he said 3 bitcoins. This happened the other day too, somebody, but again this morning, 3 bitcoins were found in a storage unit that the dude bought for $200 on a Bitcoin miner that was in there. I don't know how the miner works or how it stores the data on it, but three bitcoins were found, and it cost the dude who got them $200 on the.
$200 from a tax perspective.
Says another person found a block of Bitcoin, 3.2 Bitcoin, on a rented Bitcoin miner. He spent $200.
Huh. I'm not sure how that would work, because when you mine, it has to go into a wallet, right? There's a payout. So I'm not sure, but okay. That's just how it was phrased, is maybe not. Like, there's probably a mining computer and there's a wallet.
Yeah, maybe I misunderstood it. Guys have also been renting time on Bitcoin miners.
Yeah. You still need the phrase, the password, some way to get into that wallet, right? So the problem is, you probably put it in there with like a sticky note with the fucking shit on it or something.
It's stuck on the bottom of the thing.
Yeah.
So here's a fun one. You just put random sticky notes around with 12 words on them.
Yeah. I can't hack my
time.
I can't hack a 4-digit code on a iPod Classic. I mean, imagine having 11 or 12 words.
I did one time. I said, like, this is an example of a seed phrase. And if you read it backwards, it, like, this isn't a seed phrase, you stupid fuck, or something like that, you know. But, like, it looked like a seed phrase. And people were like, you let your seed phrase out. Like, okay, go ahead, try it.
Yeah. Oh, nope, that's the wrong order. Try a different order.
Try it from front to from back to front, asshole.
I'll go up and down.
You asshole. Like, all right, so hey, I'm reading this book. It's called The Collapse of Complex Societies by Joseph Tainter. And I thought it would be kind of cool. I'm going to do a whole show on this eventually, but it leads off with 11 suspected causes of why societies collapse, because believe it or not, science is like, we really don't really know, because every explanation, some other society went through that in a worse way and they didn't collapse. So what is the combination? What's the secret sauce to see civilizations collapse? And that doesn't always mean going away. Like, the Roman civilization collapsed, but the people didn't go away. All the places are still there. So it doesn't necessarily mean like the Mayans, where it's just empty ruins. So I thought I'd just throw each one at you and see what you think of it. And some of them might require explanation. So if it does, tell me. But I'd like to hear from both of you. Where do you think we fall on the scale of these 11 things? Number one, depletion of resources.
I don't think we've depleted our resources.
No, I think we're being lied to about our resources being depleted.
Yeah, I agree.
We've got a lot here.
Okay.
So I don't know. I mean, I don't have a numeric number to put on that, numeric number. But, you know.
But that one makes sense, right? That would be a cause of civilization collapse if you ran out of a resource. So we say we're not depleting resources.
But
are we?
Scarcity is happening, but.
If not logistically, are we depleting resources that people depend on from a practical standpoint? Like, oh, I don't know, the ability to have a house.
Well, like water costs are doubling, right? People's water bills are doubling because of data centers.
That doesn't mean there's not a sufficient supply. It means you can't afford it.
Correct. And then those people also won't have a job because the data centers will replace the need for them.
And how about electric bills?
Same.
Over the last 5 years, right?
Yeah.
So is it so the depletion that we would have, I would say, be an artificial scarcity, but it has the same potentially net effect. Okay, next one. This is going to be one that's hard for people to grok at first, I think. The establishment of a new resource base can actually cause a collapse.
Okay.
Can you get how that might happen?
Oh, yeah.
Because I was like, wait a minute, and then I thought about it, right? So, yeah.
Like AI?
What do you think on that? Like AI, exactly. And that would be an example. What happens is people stop relying on the resource base that controlled them, and they become more diffused in their focus and therefore less central identity in the civilization. Because what really holds a civilization together is a common ideal. And that's not on this list, but I added that one. Okay. How about insurmountable catastrophe?
Sure. We get targeted with that over and over, right? A lot of it's distraction, right? A lot would say that this invasion is a distraction from the Epstein list.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think we're anywhere near that one particularly, but if I'm evaluating, could it cause the collapse of a civilization? I would say, Pompeii, for instance, or something.
Yellowstone blowing up, for example. That would do it. Or California falling off into the sea. I mean, we joke about that, but that would actually have a pretty big ripple effect.
How about insufficient response to circumstances?
Yep.
Does that feel a little closer to home?
That and overreaction to circumstances, yes.
Yeah. Insufficient overreaction would be a type of insufficiency, because whatever you're overreacting here, you're not covering there. So this is interesting to me because I've studied civilization collapse, and there's plenty of instances just here in the Americas. We don't have to just do Greek and Rome and whatever and the Chinese dynasties, where these tribes that had grown into basically city states had everything they needed to fix the problem. But they had grown so large as a polity that they put all the resources into maintaining the affluent level of society, and they didn't fix the actual problems. This creates resentment, and then the population goes, well, fuck you.
So somebody in the comments brought up, back to the first one of resources, the soil depletion, which I didn't think of originally, and that's actually huge.
Huge. That's huge. A huge problem.
Yeah.
We only get away with it because we have so much damn land, right?
Yeah.
And we keep sciencing our way out. We'll get to that, though. Other complex societies. So sometimes a civilization can be absorbed by another civilization. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean a direct, military invasion. I'm just going to say it. There's a huge segment of the United States population right now that does not share our values, does not share our common ideal, and that segment is growing. While the segment that still does, you tell me it's not shrinking. I mean, we're not at replacement rate.
That's true.
We're not. By any stretch of our imagination, we're not at replacement rate. We can't maintain our population.
There's only one group of people at replacement rate. I mean, even Japan is giving houses away to move in there.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's a global issue, right?
And that's probably the biggest threat you've mentioned so far from my perspective is that because we're not people who value, individual freedoms and prosperity for all through deregulation and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Sort of the live and let live perspective. We're not making it seem attractive to people who just want to be taken care of.
Okay.
Basically.
So that's other complex societies having pull effects, right? So then the next one is actually intruders. So that's direct invasion, and that can be kind of what we were just talking about too, or it can be full on this society decides this other society needs to be their slaves. Like the way that the Roman Empire expanded into the Goth areas and things like that. So I don't think we have that problem in that direct approach. I think we have that the prior problem in the more subversive approach, but what do y'all think as far as intruders? I think when people come into your country illegally, that's kind of an intruder, though.
Well, that's also the people replacing. I mean, that's the group, the body we're talking about, I think.
Because if you lined a million soldiers up on the Mexican border and said you were invading the United States, I think you would see a bright flash of light, and then you would meet whatever comes in the next life. You would never be able to invade the United States on land like that as an army. But 10 million people would just walk in.
But let's sit here for a second. How could things go kinetic here aside from civil unrest? Like, who would it be who actually hits us, and where would they hit us? Like, if you were thinking right now is 50% chance we're going to have soldiers on the ground that we're going to have to put back, would that look like a terrorist attack, or would that look like Canada?
I don't think it would be Canada.
I don't think it would be Canada either. That's why I brought that up. But yeah,
I don't know. We're a very difficult nation to invade. We would be pretty easy to attack, though, using the same tactics we use on other countries. So we can only knock, like we said earlier, you can only knock so many missiles and rockets down. But most nations capable of mounting an attack like that understand the concept of a Pyrrhic victory. And boy, I'm telling you what, of all the hornet's nests you wouldn't want to open, it's this one. So I'm not real worried about that. I'm worried about internal conflict. When you look at Iran, it's really easy to write them off as the third world and whatever. But if you were in Iran in 1975, like John said, people used to fly there to go on fucking vacation. It was beautiful. And it turned into an Islamic third world hellhole with complete domination and control in months.
Yeah, it was fast.
It was very, very quick. And I always warn people when they say it can't happen here. Boy, because every time it happened, somebody said that right before it happened. So I worry about that. And if you think about what was done in Iran to get that done is they activated the college youth. It was college students who took the American hostages, and they all did it because they thought they were going to get more freedom, and they were being oppressed by the big mean Shah, and they were under the thumb of the Americans and the Western world, and they should have their own freedom. And it went from that's what we're fighting for to here, put this hijab on and shut your fucking mouth that fast. And it's, you want to say that can't happen here. And
that would literally happen here.
Yes.
I think if the extreme left really gets more violent and takes over, we're not looking at a left-run thing. We're looking at more what would be considered ultra-conservative right.
Yeah.
Actually. We're looking at the opposite of what they think they're fighting for.
Exactly. And when they're exalting these groups of people who literally are the worst thing in the world according to their own standards of judgment, that's why the underbelly of any civilization has always been the youth. They're always angry. They always feel like, you know, they're not getting their own their share of what they should. They always feel underappreciated. We did. We just weren't so stupid about it, I guess. But that's always been the attack vector of anybody that wants to take over a society is the youth, because they have enough future ahead of them and enough dread about that future to, if you give them something that looks a little bit better, a lot of them will latch onto it. All right.
We could be attacked by countries calling in their debt from the U.S. withholding their minerals.
And that would be a form of other complex societies.
Yeah.
Right. How about class conflict?
You don't
have any of that, right?
Yeah, that's happening.
Well, I think the power is
been higher.
Our own government wants that. I mean, they need to keep you divided so that you're not paying attention to what they're doing, right? It's legal for them, not for us. And they need to, it's the whole black versus whites, gay versus straight, upper class versus, you know, lower class and the middle class. Now the middle class is the lower class. It's all division.
Zoning makes that worse.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's happening everywhere.
Yeah. Yeah. We're in a big zoning fight in Tennessee.
If it's not happening where you are, it's only because it's not there yet.
Yep. I completely agree. Okay. So class conflict, we check that box. Social dysfunction. We don't have any social dysfunction. No.
Is it our age saying that, or do we really have social dysfunction? Because we're also of an age where we're supposed to say that. Mm. But yes, it's dysfunctional.
You know, if we were only bitching about kids that were 20 years old, I'd say it's because we're old codgers now. But there's plenty of people our age that are this mentally devoid of common sense, right? Like, people can't function in society. And
well,
go ahead.
Physically can't speak to one another. Like, I mean, go to Walmart, see if you can get some assistance, right? You've got, at least our Walmart has a bunch of horse face, no body shape. I don't know what the fuck they're wearing for clothing. Like, I don't even know where that came from. And they just like, are they almost look like they have no soul. They sit up there and pretend to watch you check out. There is no eye contact and they're constantly texting. Where in the fuck can you get a job where you can stand and just be on fucking social media all day? Because when you walk past, that's what they're on. They're on social media and they're paying them to stand there and then harass you when you try to go out the door.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, but the other side of that is, how does that affect that reproductive rate?
Like, oh, they're not reproducing.
10-year-old dude, on average, I'm sure there's always exceptions, right? There's always the wings of the bell curve. But the average 18-year-old male today, can they confidently walk up to a female and go, hey, I really like you, and I was wondering if you want to go out on a date with me?
No, they can't. They can't look each other in the eyes.
You know, do you want to go? We had to all this build up. Like, instead of like, hey, you want to go to the prom? Now we have promposals and everything. Everything's made into extravagance, and then everything's also digitized. And the ability of people to interact, like drinking's down, is that good? Yeah, but is it down just because younger generations are making the choice not to drink, or because they're not going to real world social engagement where people drink like bars anymore?
And can't afford it. I mean, like, and you talk about the population decline. They're not breeding because they're vaxxed to the max. We've still got them wearing masks.
Yeah.
Like everything's a victim. Like when you get close and you listen to the actual conversations, something is like the conversation that is taking place is, I have this ailment. I have this thing. This is wrong. This person wronged me. There's never positivity.
Yeah. And I also think you have like this phenomenon today with all the filtering and all the positive reinforcement on the female side. There's a lot of women that, I don't want to be mean or anything, let's say they're like a 5 or a 6, but their standard for a man is like a 9.
Yeah.
And, right? You can say whatever you want, but there is kind of this way that society has always worked that people are always shooting to be a little above their pay grade, but like you also accept kind of who you are and what you can get from the other side. But now we have like this whole group of men that, like, in the words of Homath, these are literally not people in the eyes of females of their contemporaries, specifically in that 30 and under range, you know?
Soy is a good way to put it, but I think it's so far beyond soy, yeah. CP9, man. I mean, the chemicals that are soy, we'd be so much better off if it was just soy.
It was just soy and seed oil.
Go to Home Depot or Lowe's and just greet the people that work there. Most of the employees will not look at you. When you find the old dude, hey, what are you looking for? What can I do for you? He actually knows the application of it. He knows, he has some advice for you. Go find the young dude. There are few and far between who will even assist you. Like, hey, can you unlock this lock? I'd like to buy one of these flashlights. And it's a 4-digit lock. They got to find the person that has the code. And it's always the old dude. It's frustrating. I go to Home Depot or Lowe's and want to buy this thing and it's locked up. I just won't buy it from you. Because you can't get your employees to do what they need to do or stop the theft, I just won't buy it from your company. I'll just go on Amazon and order it. And Amazon's the devil. I believe that wholeheartedly. But I can get it from Amazon and have it here tomorrow rather than trying to find one of your employees that doesn't want to assist to open the latch so that I can buy it from your company.
I'll pay $8 for the $6 hairbrush before I'll go wait for somebody to take the fucking hairbrush out of the – right. And that is part of the social dysfunction, right? Like people – like not only can people not communicate and retain – like, oh, hey, 4571, here's your hairbrush. That would be a pain in the ass, but at least it would be – you could bear that. But part of the social dysfunction is, why is that shit locked up?
But dude, I went to Walmart and we go to the cosmetic aisle and they've got all these – these like Lexan plexiglass boxes around everything. First of all, when you walk in the aisle, it has a doorbell, ding dong, so that you know you're being recorded and there's a monitor of you on it. And then the shit, half of the aisle is in a box and you got to list the lid. You have access to it, but another fucking chime goes off when you open the lid to get the thing. Yeah. Fuck it. Yeah. I can buy it from Amp. Like, I understand, like, go to, like, even Walmart now on Black Friday, it's not packed. We don't have need for, and I think that's by design too, because then they can control you from it. You'll have less options of it. Walmart stated that by 2030, and they're actually they said 2050. Now they're saying 2030. They've moved their timeline back. Their goal was to have they wanted 65% of their current customers to not attend the store. If you look at Walmart, They are splitting Walmart stores into two mirrored stores, and one is for you peasants to go and still buy, and the other one is for a shopper to come in and do your shopping. So when you go in there and you want apples and you order Fiji apples, they only have two types of apples. You get the apples that the dude just delivers you.
The guy picked up for you.
Yeah, you don't have a – there is no choice. And people that use the service don't realize it's happening. But
so yesterday I had a really good experience.
I mean, we
could
agree that what's causing this is theft. If people weren't – like literally, like what you're describing, it's like you're doing a Mission Impossible level protection for like razor blade shaving cream and fucking Q-tips. Right, like you have to go through this maze of technology to get razor blades.
But we live in a county of 6,000 people. The city has 3,000. How much theft could this Walmart possibly have? Or is this to get you to accept what they're about to do? Right, they put look how many businesses went out of business during COVID.
Or is it standardization? Like this is how we run our stores because if you go to LA or you go to Portland or you go to Seattle. It is theft.
Yeah.
And most of these enterprises at this size, they do a standardization across all things because it's just easier to do that way. You train everybody the same way. You manage everybody the same way because like we have like Seattle, like they're running out of stores. Fucking stores are just like, fuck it. It's not worth it. I don't want to be here. Between the tax and the theft and you won't prosecute the fucking people that steal. Fuck it. We're just going to close the store. And you have the mayor saying retarded shit like, we're going to force them to stay. Well, good luck with that, Karen.
Massive shopping mall in Nashville. I think it's actually Franklin. Huge, huge. Three-story. Big, huge. Still existing. Yeah. They just sold 85% of their parking to a development company. So we noticed when we went there a couple weeks ago to go to a bra store, right? Victoria's Secrets. They had I go, did you just valet? Did you just pay to park? Like she scanned this thing and paid for preferential parking. Well, that's what it's all going to be. It's going to be pay to parking, 85%, and they're building stack and pack apartments, skinny apartments. And then on the base level, there will be some more businesses outside. This is the same mall that we hadn't been to in 5-6 years. We went to it about a year ago, and they had swap meet shit on the base floor where you usually have the Israelis, beautiful lady, let me touch your face and sell you this bullshit.
Yeah.
They had literally dudes had thrown up folding tables and were selling shit they had brought from their house.
Oh, wow. Wow. So what you're saying
I want to give you a gem of hope though.
All right.
Just a singular experience I had yesterday between gym and choir. I wanted a cup of tea and I had hot water, but no tea bags. So I go to Food Lion. And I walk in, because I don't do that, but I don't usually go into grocery stores. I'm like, I have no idea where it is. And this guy who was young, putting things away, looked at me, observed that I looked confused and asked me, can I help you find something? And then he told me right where it was, looked me in the eye, and I was like, whoa, that hasn't happened to me in a store in like 3 years.
Well, two things. Number one, he was homeschooled. Or number two, he was hitting on you.
Maybe.
He was hitting you. Just don't realize
I look after the gym with my face already.
He was hitting on you.
He must have wanted to date mommy then. Cause...
Well, yeah.
Maybe.
Why would he want one of his peers?
Yeah.
That's a good thing. Somebody's like, he was homeschooled.
What?
This is a good one. The anti-theft measures are not just control mechanism like John is saying, but also the younger generation doesn't regard property properly anymore. They are being indoctrinated.
Yeah. So there is no property. I'm not stealing. Nobody is illegal on stolen land. Right. But this is, you know, this is what I think of when Nicole tells that story. Right. This is a bell curve for people on the audio only. There's a guy standing in the center of the bell curve and it says, this is how things work. And then there's a chick on the very far end of like the quarter of a percentile pointing down and goes, how do you explain this one?
Did you just
right. I know that's not what Nicole was doing, but like those one-offs don't give me a lot of faith, man. I am more worried about the totality of the system. But what I hear you saying there, John, is that the social dysfunction is expanding the class conflict because we're creating these different tiers of society. So like, I'm not going to deal with that bullshit. Neither are you. Like, we'll have the better parking or we will have the shit delivered straight to our house and we'll pay for the better level. When I order the Fuji apples, I don't only just get Fuji. I get like, there's no bruises on them. I'm going to have the premium shopper bring me my shit. Cause I have money. And I can, And then the average person is going to have to go schlep through all the shit and be abused. And that's going to make them resent me more. And then say, I should help them. And I'm not going to do that because I'm like, you should fucking work. So those two seem to mix off each other and aggravate each other.
Yes. And this thing right here amplifies it, right? I post eggs for $4 a dozen.
Yeah.
And I get some wacko. It's like, you're robbing people. I know where your chickens are. I'll just come get the eggs myself.
I love watching those chains.
Did you put up a picture of Porthos in response to that?
No, other people did. But, I mean, it's pretty wild, right? It got to the point where I tagged the sheriff's department and the sheriff and said, hey, I just need this documented at this point because this dude clearly is crazy.
Yeah.
He's clearly trespassed if he's saying he's been on the property. So I just need documentation in case something happens in the future.
So if he gets eaten or I, you know.
And then weeks later after the fact, wackos show up and they're like, well, clearly he was just, you're over exaggerating this.
Yeah.
He was just agitating you.
Yeah.
Like it, but you, like these people show up, like they don't even live in this area. We just had a dude said, I'm going to lead a ICE protest at the courthouse in Paris. Who's with me? And a bunch of people are like, yeah, you're not going to do that. That's not going to happen here. That's not going anywhere. Hundreds of people show up in that group. And when you look at them, none of them are from here. They're just agitators.
Yep. Yep.
Lady just posted in Dixon. She had some Anatolian shepherds for sale. 100 comments. How dare you let your dog breed? Why isn't your dog fixed? You should be fixed. Two people were like, she's got livestock dogs. Do you want one or do you not want one?
Yeah.
And they're like, you can't. She said, I'm setting up at Walmart. Anybody needs a good dog.
Block.
50 of these comments are like, Walmart won't let you do that. You can't do that. They're going to shut you down. Like, it's just.
And I wonder how many of those are from a cell phone in a rack of cell phones in China.
Are they? Like, are they? Or is it crazy people? I think it's crazy people that are in Reddit groups and like the animal rights people, for instance, and they all pour in, or the Ice Watch people and they all pour in.
Yeah. Like they pick one and put them on blast and then it all.
Yeah.
Shows. Yeah. That's a thing. Yeah. That's a thing. Definitely. All right. Here's your next one. Mystical factors. So what they mean in the book, because this does review like all the collapses we can document to try to figure out what causes it. That's the whole point of this dissertation. And so they mean something like, you know, the leader of the polity was supposed to, because they did all the right things and sacrificed the virgins or whatever, the volcano was not supposed to erupt. Well, when the volcano erupts, not only does it cause damage, it also causes people to look at the leader and say, well, maybe you really can't do the bullshit you said you can do. I don't think we have that problem directly, but it sounds very familiar to like, I'm going to fix everything and then you don't. Right. It seems like the same, like it ends up being a lack of faith in leadership.
Or on the other side, the doomsayers that, you know, predict a date.
Yeah.
It's the cry wolf over and over and over and over.
So can I get weird?
Yeah, sure.
You are
this
weird.
This is where I get to get weird. I know I am weird. So lately have, from an energetic spiritual standpoint, in the last April is when it started, the negative/spiritual attacks here have increased a lot. So that's me in my belief system. But so I think there is that as well happening. And I think it's important to talk about it openly from my perspective, because the way we push that back is we push that back by putting the positive out there and like standing ground for good and for, you know, healing and those sorts of things. That's why we're so focused here, because I'm like, here is where I can do that with the people around me.
I mean,
I do think that has increased nationally for sure here in the United States.
Yeah. And if I go back 30 years, I could say that there was kind of like a common morality, like even people that vastly disagreed, there was like this whole list of shit that we were all like, that's evil. That's wrong. We don't do that. And the people that didn't think that, but that was outliers. That was, you know, 3-4% of the population. And we had asylums back then too, by the way, thanks Nancy for closing those down on us instead of just fixing them. And today we don't. And I do think that's a very spiritual connected thing, that even if we had different faiths or different beliefs in, from a mystical standpoint, we kind of had like, okay, and it's all cool as long as we don't think it's okay to kill people, as long as we don't think it's okay, you know, to let men abuse women. Like, if as long as we can get into this kind of commonality, we can all get along, even if we disagree and sometimes contentiously. And that seems like it's gone. I don't know if that's quite mystical. I don't know if we have, from the standpoint of how it's explained in the book, I don't know if we have that problem per se, but some analog of it, which is kind of what I think Nicole's saying.
Yeah, and I'm not coming at it from the leaders of different faiths are failing us. I'm going at it just from purely that spiritual realm here.
Yeah. Well, definitely church attendance is way down, right? I mean, that's a metric we can look at. And so does that mean I think everyone needs to go to church? And my answer is no, but that's my answer. But I do think it is a kind of a way to take the pulse of how important spirituality is to a nation, is what kind of participation is there in the various forms of spirituality that are available. When you create a vacuum, some people will tend to grab onto anything. But I don't know if I could say we definitely have that problem, but maybe parts of it. And then there was, how about this, a perfect storm of events. That sounded like a cop-out to me, because duh. But I think it was saying that, like, when certain things stack up, and that's kind of why I want to have this discussion, how many of those things are stacking up on us right now?
Inflation? Division? Ooh, there goes my thumbs up. I need to find that setting. I have not found it. So inflation, and we've got the division politically, and we've got some scarcity of resource after we have discussed this. I think a lot of those things are stacking up. We had another big catastrophe. Like, you think about all of the big catastrophes we've had in the last few years, where flooding and deaths and wiping out whole towns and that sort of thing. That's been stressful to the nation, too. So Yellowstone goes, that's going to be hard.
You got it. Yeah. Yeah. That's a, everything else doesn't matter if Yellowstone goes.
Yeah. Yellowstone goes. We need to make a bingo card. Like, Yellowstone goes is one of them on the.
Part of where the author and more of the, like, he, this guy, this is a very deep, kind of something somebody would write like as a PhD thesis or something, this book. And so he's also analyzing all these other social scientists and stuff that have reviewed this. And kind of the point they're making, though, is let's say you had this massive flood and it caused a crop failure. Well, if that happened in a normal situation, it'd be bad, but it wouldn't compromise civilization. But if you had some sort of major event like that, and the people in charge had been liquidating the treasury, had no reserves in, and there were other social contentious problems, then that could be the final straw that pushes things over. Whereas if it was isolated, it would not.
Well, think about this. What if you had a massive drought in the middle of the country for years?
Yep, and that'd be the duration of that event, right?
Right. And while at the same time, major technological advances are happening, causing some of the older things, older professions to be obsolete, while also not having a way to help people in extreme poverty even stay alive. Like, what would happen?
There'd be a lot of people killing other people for what they had. That's what would happen. And that's historically what has happened, right? You get into points like when you get that storm of events, what happens when you become highly reliant on a technology, and it doesn't take much to operate the technology, but to actually repair, fix, and develop the technology and replace the technology is complicated. And all the people that knew how to do it age out, die out. And then you start having systemic failures, and then there's no one there that can put it back together. And we think of that with computers and shit today, but that could be as simple as irrigation systems of the past. Like, as long as everything keeps working, it's fine. But if it falls apart, if people come in and sack you and destroy it, and you don't have any of the old timers on how to put it back together, or if you're on the edge of that, and then you get a plague, and plagues usually kill older people faster than younger people. Not always.
I mean, have you noticed the plague is starting in California again?
Yeah,
it's the plague. Not the COVIDs, but the actual plague. Yeah.
There's a new nondescript virus that's being spun as the worst thing ever right now, which they do about twice a year.
Yeah.
Well, now if a real one comes, it's like, what is this?
Well, that is a danger. I think there is a danger of a massive lethal pandemic at some point. And will anybody take it seriously? Because right now it's very hard for me to take it seriously.
Well, I think there's people trying to play and introduce that. They keep busting these bio labs that have all kinds of plagues and diseases and shit, and yeah. rodents that they're testing on. They just busted another one, I believe, in California a month ago. But, you know, nothing was brought up that last year they busted a couple. There's one in San Diego, one in Texas, and one in Las Vegas. Nobody even mentioned that in any of that reporting, that this is not the first time this has happened. They just found a girl bringing some worm, some Chinese virologist.
Oh, yeah, I saw that.
Worms in. Well, the worm's not the problem. What's inside the worm?
Inside the worm.
That,
yeah.
Why was that not asked?
Yeah. Yeah, there's that. And then there's like the one you were talking about with the biolabs where they caught this Chinese dude with a biolab.
From the slime.
He's in fucking prison.
Yes.
They come up with another one, and it turns out he's basically managing it from prison.
The landlord. It's yeah. the landlord, the tenant. The tenant's in prison. The landlord's yeah. managing it. They yeah. arrested him and let him out the next day on bail.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the daughter's in there. And then they pulled that dude's records because there's a recording of him from jail asking his daughter, where are the guns? He's prohibited on another thing, not supposed to have them. So they execute a warrant, seize the guns, and now they can't find the dude that they let out on bail the day before. And the Vegas one got caught because a code enforcement dude was driving through an alley
yeah.
and saw a hose that had been dripping and there was a bunch of slime. So he wanted to make a big deal of that, tracks it back, finds out that this is a whole fucking biolab and they've got all kinds of commercial freezers and commercial equipment. It literally looks like some shit out of a movie. And there's a bunch of Chinese people.
And even without that, can we create our own pandemic out of something we already have without any kind of fancy research or anything, just by continuing to denude the health of people? And what I mean is, like, when the COVID hit, right, like, when we finally got an actual honest look at the data, the number one factor that determined whether a person lived or died wasn't even age. It was it just so happened that when you're really old, you have very low vitamin D levels. So people with very low vitamin D levels did poor. People with moderate did okay. And people with really high vitamin D levels tended to not be affected much by it at all. There was also, like, what's your selenium levels? There were several different mineral nutrients that people tend to be low in. Zinc as well. That if they had good levels of all those, they were the people that were asymptomatic or whatever. And so you can have something mutate just a little bit. And if that's your perfect storm of events, right, that combines with poor nutritional health, poor health in general from something else we've done, then you can get something that has a 20% lethality rate or 10% lethality rate, which would be catastrophic beyond words, versus being a 1% or a fraction of a percent.
Yeah.
All right, I got one more for you.
Okay.
This is an easy one.
I like this game.
I'm sure they put it last. Economic factors.
The economy is fine. Nonsense.
Yeah, it's good, right?
Yeah.
You know, examples are like the Roman Empire beginning to debase the denarius by simply bringing all the coins back in and remelting them and adding more base metal to them and then saying they said the same face value. And that caused inflation. And it was that's the thing, the problem. We look at all these societies. This is why I went down this rabbit hole. We look at all these societies that collapse and we always want to say, well, it was when they debased the money or whatever. Like, yeah, but what else did they do? And what I found, I'm about halfway through this book, like, there isn't a society that I've examined so far through the book that you can say it's one of these things. It's always some combination thereof. It's A leads to B leads to C leads to D, and the reactionary mode. But, like, the most common thing I see is that when you look at what we know, because some of these are very old civilizations, it appears in most of them that the people that were in power had everything they needed to fix the problem but chose not to.
Well, they're all digging bunkers right now. They don't have to fix the problem. They don't want the problem fixed.
Yeah.
That's how they control.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. So who benefits if our society collapses right now?
Well, one world governance. To have one world governance, you have to get rid of China, Russia, and America. Or at least have turmoil. And I mean, for one world governance, I mean, are our politicians not already bought and paid for?
Yeah. Or one of those three powers has to become the head of the snake, right? And that means two of them have to be drastically weakened. If that's your goal, if you want world government, because people in this country aren't gonna well, right now, but like, how many people are we breeding in our next generations that's a much smaller number of body count as our population declines, who think everything's so terrible, the boomers stole everything, blah, 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 we deserve ours, and they believe in a magical fairyland where that can happen.
So here's a little bit more about the that lab in Las Vegas was owned by a Chinese guy who was already in jail for a California lab and managed by a guy from Israel. And then he says they were using the house as an Airbnb. If that isn't an inoculation station, I don't know what is.
Hmm. Oh.
Yeah.
That's like deploying at an airport or something, right? So you get dispersed.
Yeah, or spraying a buffet or, you know, I mean, yeah. We've all seen it in all the books.
Yeah.
I'm from Oregon. We saw it in Oregon with the Rajneesh.
Yeah, and capitulation, I was going to come back to that workhorse when we talked about the United States. You know, you can't conquer the United States, but you could attack the United States, right? Or maybe Gavin Newsom lets China come in, right? He let China in. They took out all the homeless. Where did those guys go? And then they rolled out and did all the banners and cleaned up all of San Francisco and everything for Xi Jinping to come to the United States, right? So maybe that happens. Capitulation. They say that 85% of the population lives on the coast. How, if you look at California, less than 10% of it is crazy liberal and the rest of it is, you know, the Wild West and free, but it's all controlled by those little tiny states. So capitulation on the East Coast and the West Coast. Bear does talk about that. He also says everything everywhere all at once. And depending how you look at it, from what level of view, it does seem like everything everywhere all at once. And then another thing, you know, with the economy and the speeding up of things, we've never woke up in the morning and had zero sales. But that's happened three times in the last 90 days, probably. Zero sales, zero. And not just at midnight, nobody bought from midnight till 4:30 or 5 o'clock when we get up in the morning.
I understand. You mean a full.
Yeah. So you look at it and Shopify is down. And then you go and you look at Down Detector. Well, lo and behold, Down Detector, the people who tell you everything is down, they're down too. Because they're hosted on Amazon Web Services.
Oh, Amazon was down yesterday.
This is happening more and more and more. Like literally, and I don't know the reporting, because every time I hear YouTube's down, Facebook's down, Instagram's down, 75% of the internet's down, all my other shit still works.
Yeah.
Just not my money source.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the weird thing is, the weird shit is, we don't have any emails from any clients going, hey, your website didn't work. But when we ask, 30 of them are like, oh yeah, I couldn't log on. I just couldn't check out. They can, the cart works, the site works. The money exchanging portion was cut off. It just, they couldn't pay.
Well, and a lot of these hacks where they do ransomware and all, there's nothing that actually prevents the service from being delivered or the product from being created. It's that you can't bill and you can't log the billing. Like some of these hospitals have been shut down. There's nothing that stops the guy. Oh, that guy over there needs this drug. Okay, go over here, open the fucking thing, walk over here, hook it up to his fucking IV and turn it on. They won't do it because they can't document it and they can't bill for it.
And I mean, say something about Middle East, New Jersey right now, right?
Middle East,
New Jersey. All of a sudden, none of your banking works. Look how many content creators talking about that area of the world literally have had all of their commerce gates cut off.
Well, we had Operation Choke Point, where they tried to cut off all of the Bitcoin crypto stuff.
Yep.
They were debanking people who weren't even doing business in it. They just had it, and their bank knew they had it because they had transferred to like a Coinbase or a Gemini or something, and they shut down their bank accounts.
Yeah.
And they were shutting down bank accounts, too, of like nonprofits that were conservative and things like that. And people look at that and go, that was one vector of attack. Well, they could decide to do that to everybody.
Yeah, and I'm not even talking about cyber attack. I'm just talking about governments in power.
Well, I'm saying if they can cyber it, then the government can do it intentionally, right? Yeah, wasn't cyber. That was banks consciously working with the government.
Yeah, Bank of America shutting down Remington that had been a customer for over 120 years.
Yeah. Yeah. I think one of Trump's sons was just saying he was debanked recently.
Yeah,
you're a fucking son of the president of the United States. I mean, whether you hate the guy or not, you really gotta let that sink in.
Yeah,
because there's people like, oh fuck them, I don't care. But Bro, think.
If they can do it to them.
But these are the same people saying that when they blow up a narco drug boat, that means you might be out there fishing and they'll blow you up. And like, oh, geez. So you're going to make that leap. But you can't comprehend that if you can shut down somebody like that financially, that you can do it to anybody. And right now there's a, what's his name? Fink from BlackRock. I just had this on yesterday. He's over at the WDF. He wants a one world global blockchain to manage all finance.
Yeah, as a portal. Isn't that U.S. coin or whatever, the portal? So everything.
No, he wants
the
much more than that. He wants this to be literally one world blockchain coin to rule them all, one ring to bind them, right? Like literally, he wants the one ring of Sauron economically for the, not for the United States, for the world.
Everybody.
You want to tax them, but you make a new tax, you just like, okay, we're just going to take 2% of everybody's savings. Boom, just moves it over. We don't like John Willis anymore. He does bad things. We're going to reduce his carbon allowance. And then what will happen is at a certain point, you can't spend the money. Or it'll be like some of the tollways now. Like they literally have sensors that can be like, you have two people in the vehicle, they charge you less than if you have one person in the vehicle with the toll tags. So you could do that with a currency like that. You could say like, once you've exceeded a certain allowance in your carbon or whatever they want to limit, you can still spend your money, but now you have to pay a higher sales tax on it.
Yeah, they can also, you have 90 days to spend your money. Isn't that what's happening supposedly in China?
Yeah. Yeah, they give you money, but then you have to spend it all within a given period or they take it back.
No generational wealth. You can't have any accumulation, so it keeps you in your...
And that's common in government budgets here, and it has been for years. When I ran a motor pool in the Army, like at the end of the fiscal year, they're like, buy fucking everything. Get extra, spend every fucking penny in your budget. Because if you don't spend it, they're going to take it back, and your new budget is not going to have that. They're going to reduce it by that percentage because obviously you don't need it. So it was just like fill the parts bins, do whatever, spend the money. There was a two huge anchors at one of the naval air stations, like one like the kind of anchor like a battleship would use, and it turned out down in Panama that they had actually spent the money on those anchors to do that because that unit needed to get rid of that money. So they bought two battleship anchors and used them as ornaments.
Like, I was so, I'd love a corporation who ran that way, and it was the dumbest thing from a financial planning standpoint.
Yeah, that's I'd a rich dad, poor dad principle. That, like, in the government, you're paid to have more people work for you, and you get more clout by spending more money, where in the private sector, you're judged on your efficiency. If you can do more with less money and less people, then you're rewarded for that, where you're actually punished in a bureaucratic situation. So if you give complete bureaucratic control to the monetary supply, That mindset runs the entire economy. And you can't tell me there aren't people that would wet dream themselves to death over having that button and control of that button.
Yeah, that's why road projects are popping up at the end of the year. There's a prime example of it right out here, but it's so much it's so much more insidious than that, right?
That one makes me so sad.
The feds give the money to the state gives the money to the municipalities. If you look back at Agenda 21 and then Agenda 25 and 30, it's now called America 2050 is the code word for it. But that's how all your chicken laws and all your nonsense comes to be, right? Why would you take a place that is rural and has farms and say you can only have four hens, no rooster, right? Those are farms, but that's pushed down through all that one world governance nonsense. So they give them a little bit of money every year, and then they come through and they buy up these pieces of property and rip the roofs off of them, and then it's an eyesore. They have to make their next year, they have to accomplish these things on the checklist, and if they don't, they don't get that next batch of money, and those local politicians look bad because now they've started this mess. They've cut up part of the road, or they've cut down the trees, or they've started, and they are beholden, and they have to do these things that they're told to do. And while, along the way, you can steal part of the money, right? That's how we got a mayor bought a bank and then made it his office where he never sits or resides. That's how they do all these other public projects. And then they have to keep going. That's how all of a sudden we have a code enforcement guy that's harassing people about chickens on farms in city limits that are 5 acres and have been farms for the last 100 years.
Yeah.
But that's all of that shit.
See, but you say it's a little bit of money they give them, but it's really a shitload of money.
It's right? A fucking ton of money.
All these up, it's billions, if not trillions of dollars. How do they have that money? Well, they have that money because they can literally print it, and they do it under the guise of we're stimulating the economy, or it's an environmental initiative, right? Like whatever makes it sound sexy, makes it sizzle, that's what they'll put on it. And they'll literally like do the exact same thing in two different places, but they'll market it differently, right? Here it's an environmental concern. Here it's to enhance business. Whatever that local population actually most wants, you sell people what they want to buy, and you sell a lot of it. But you sell the same thing, and the way you package it changes how it's perceived because most people don't pay attention. Most people aren't Nicole that, like, when something like that shows up on her radar, she's like, I'm going to fucking find out what the fuck this is, and if it's wrong, I'm going to go down there and fuck some shit up, right? Like, most people are just like, what are you going to do?
Yeah, well, because it's the way it's always been done. You know, I don't know if I'll win here, but I'm going to try my darndest where, you know, Tennessee has just made it harder to fight zoning coming in at the rural level because they basically undercut a county's ability to regulate without zoning. And they're like, well, that's too much like zoning, so you need to adopt our zoning. Well, if you adopt the zoning, then that's how you push the farms out. And then when you push the farms out, you get all of the issues related to that. People are like, we need to save the farms, so we're going to zone them so that they get pushed out. And they just won't see that.
And there is this larger thing right now of the left, especially globally, less in the United States, but it's infiltrating in, that farming's bad for the environment. We need to stop farming.
Oh, there's that. Yeah.
Like, and not what you and I say, like we need to go to regenerative methods. No, we need to quit farming. Where the fuck do you
think
your food comes from, you batshit crazy fuck?
Like 10 years ago, I'm at the gym. And there's this big dude, looks like a big bodybuilding Kenny Rogers. His name's John. He was telling me about this nonsense his neighbor's going through, has some rabbits. And the runoff down the hill takes the rabbit manure and puts it in this little stream. And the stream goes into a little waterway, right? And there's this algae bloom from the protein or whatever.
Yeah.
And they came in and gave this dude a ton of hassle. Tennessee Wildlife Authority and code and all this shit. They find this dude and he goes to court over it. This big fucking mess. A mile up the road is DuPont, Kenmore's, the power plant, all this stuff. And there's all kinds of metals, cancer rate. And they're just harassing this dude over that shit.
Over rabbit shit.
Over rabbit manure. And that's this farm shit, man. It is always, they're going to give you a hassle.
And is it really even causing a problem? Because how many animals in those woods shit in that creek every day anyway?
It's not at all, man. It's not. That's just it. We got all this carp and all these flying carp and this shit that's killing all the ecosystem, but you're harassing this one dude because they can't do shit about it, but they have to justify. And most of it's just a bureaucrat, because you told him no, or you didn't comply or bend to his will.
Or a lot of times what it is, it's a neighbor that's just a dick and finds a fucking pressure point and then harasses the government to harass the neighbor. And it's a complaint-driven system in a lot of ways. Like, there's places where nobody ever had a problem. One motherfucker moves in, and suddenly everybody has a problem. Right? And it's like, wait a minute. Like, you're the one that's new here. And that is okay, here's my 12th one I added to that list of 11 we went through. Loss of a common ideology. I don't even understand how that's not in this dude's book. Because I think when I look at, like, when I read, like, 1491, America Before Columbus, and all these great civilizations in the Americas that collapsed long before anybody from Europe fucking got here under that, you know, second wave of settlement, that seems to be one of the biggest things that people had, whether it was a religious thing or you look at Rome, like, the patriotism, like, of being a Roman citizen was so high at the height of Rome that, you know, men were willing to die. Men were willing to serve voluntarily, not just conscripts, knowing that, you know, what might happen? You might suck really bad and they might decimate your unit and that could be you and they would still do it. Right. That ideology was very powerful of holding things together. And when I think back, like 80s, 70s, even 90s, if you were at a concert or something and something patriotic happened, everybody stood the fuck up.
Yep.
Right. Like, it was a big deal. Like, it mattered. And if the country was wrong, but once there was a conflict, well, but you back your bros play, right? Like, you have to be on the side of your own. Like, and I don't see that now at all. And I don't just see two factions. I see hundreds of factions. Like, you know, they're protesting Iran, but this guy's got the sign that says abolish ICE. Right. Equal income and free justice and healthcare for all or whatever. Like, and so, like, even where they all get together on that lunatic fringe, there's still 1,000 different things that they want. Student loan forgiveness, whatever it is. So the ideology is not common. and it's fractured. And that's actually the biggest cause of civilizations falling apart that I've seen. That and what Nicole hit on with resource depletion, soil depletion, and lack of common ideology. Those two seem to be in every one of them.
Most of those people holding the sign don't believe in what they're holding the sign for. They just don't like whatever that other side is. They didn't get the memo that day to change that sign for the new sign of the day. Did Mondami, and I don't even know if this is true, Mondami ordered all the flags in New York over the World Trade Center and everywhere to be at half mast because the Ayatollah, does he have that power to do that? Did that happen?
I don't know if it happened. I did see it, but I don't know if it's real or not. I didn't care enough to research it. It sounds plausible.
It sounds like the fact that you're not.
Let's check.
And that's the thing, is things that sound plausible didn't necessarily happen when we see it.
Sean Ryan interviewed a guy about the next famine, and it's going to be caused by it's going to be government caused. I think most famine is government caused, at least in our history.
Yeah, even the Great Depression was made worse by the government's reaction to it.
So the genesis of the Mondami thing was the Babylon Bee article, and then it got it. Yeah, so that wasn't real. Because that was bothering me too. I'm like, I don't know that the mayor of a city can do that.
Can do that, yeah.
But the fact that the fact that we're at a point where it's completely believable.
Yeah.
It's not unfathomable with all the other shit that he's done.
Because if you would have heard 20 years ago that any mayor of New York City did that, you'd be like, fuck that, that's stupid. And now you're like the Onion, Babylon Bee and all, like, is this even satire anymore?
20 years ago, the mayor of New York was doing the broken window thing, wasn't he?
Yeah. Let's see. That would.
Or was
been
that 30 years ago now?
2006. So wouldn't that have been Giuliani?
Is that thunder here?
Because Giuliani was there for 9/11. It would either have been him or who came next? Bloomberg? I don't know.
I think it was Giuliani.
Yeah. So, what do you think, Nicole? Are we on the verge of our civilization collapsing?
I think we have been, but we might not.
Okay.
That's been my opinion the whole time. Like, it feels emotionally and from some data points, it feels close to collapse, and it feels closer to collapse than any time I can think of, even during 2020 right now to me.
Yeah.
But I can't like empirically put it in a spreadsheet for you right now.
Yeah.
But also, we could weather it and balkanize. We could do all sorts of like, it doesn't necessarily mean it's going to collapse if it does into violence, the way we think of civil war or something.
Yeah.
I'm also the optimist. I'm like, but we could still just, you know.
What I was trying to point out is that we're about to celebrate our 250th birthday as a country.
Yeah.
Technically, in my opinion, that was last year because 1775 is the real date, but fine. The Roman Empire is what we're most compared to with collapse. The Roman Empire, from the beginning of its collapse till it was fully collapsed, took longer than we've existed. It was a bit over 300 years of collapse. And to me, one of the things we can do is look at who prospered during, through, and after the collapse, and what did they do to prosper? Because what is more important than what should be, right? Like, we can all talk about the way it should be, but what is happening, what has happened, what's going to happen, that's what we have to kind of focus on. And what do you think? What are the angles that the individual can take so that they remain stable and they can be prosperous even in like these really shitty times?
I think you need to keep yourself financially above water by making yourself two ways. One, you need to create income any way you can that adds stability, and you need to create the kind of wealth that endures change, like property wealth.
Mm.
Otherwise, but at the same time, I think you need to also build the skills to go through things without being able to just buy a thing. Right. So you need to, that's a lot of what motivates us here to create food systems that feed themselves and require fewer external inputs. But also, while the external inputs are here, we use them.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And to equip other people to do that, because I think what makes us keep prosperity or keep the capacity to have a good life through something like this isn't just that we protect ours. It's that those around us are not as desperate to want to attack us. And I think that's something we don't talk about a lot, but it's really important. If you can get your whole food network in your local area, your local food network working together, you have a better chance, because when we do that, we have more stability, and then you have fewer people starving, because a starving person will try to kill you for food.
Agreed. I think one of the big mistakes people make, though, is ignoring like new technologies and stuff like that. Like AI, for example, it's the devil. It's going to eat your children or whatever. And traditionally, the people who have resisted new innovative technologies have been rolled over it by once it comes to fruition. And they've been slower movers on it, and they have suffered due to it. Because once something... What is the old saying? You can't unring the bell, or you can't put the toothpaste back in the tube. Like, once it's out, it's out.
Yeah.
And I don't think we're ever that the world these people are hoping for, that will go away, or many other innovations will go away. And I think sometimes the belief in collapse is because that people feel like they'll be more comfortable because the things they don't like will go away. When really collapse usually involves some more advanced technology overtaking those who refuse to figure out how to utilize it. Like if your enemy has guns, then you want guns. You want to be at least as good as the ones your enemy has, if not better. Like, that's the technology race.
I think a lot of people spend time here, right? They'll talk about they can't do what they want, or they can't have what they want because they don't have the money. And, you know, I don't have time for another job, or I'm not in shape because I don't have time for the gym or whatever, but they have time for this thing. And they're involved in a lot of shit that doesn't actually affect them. Like the shit going on in Iran doesn't affect anybody right now unless you have a relative or a family member over there. But how many hours have been spent on content on this when your garden's not prepped, or your cover crop's not turned over, or you haven't started, you know, you haven't brought the new chickens in, they're not under a brooder, whatever it is, whatever your money is, right? But most problems that people have can be solved with an amount of money. But they don't have that amount of money, and they put all that time into all this other shit, and they're not making any money. And I think especially with homesteaders, they have this idea that this side hustle or this other stream of revenue, and they put a little bit of time here and a little bit of time here and a little bit of time here. But really, when we look at it, they're not paying themselves an hourly rate, and they spend way more than minimum wage every week doing this thing that makes less than what they would have had at a minimum wage job, where if they just put into what they actually do well that makes money, they would have a ton more money, and then they could hire people, buy things, or do the things they need to do. But a lot of people get convinced, especially through the YouTube channels and the side hustle shit, that they need to be doing all these other things, and they're not good at doing any of them, and none of them are profitable if you're really honest with yourself.
Yeah, I'm all for the side hustle, but then you have to pick one to be really good at and optimize it. And if you can make it passive, like if it is something little and it only makes you $300 or $400 a month, but it's really passive, it's like some sort of dropship automated sales portal or something, that's like having $80,000 in the bank paying interest. So that's fine. But if you're spinning the plates, like in the gag, right, where you have to run over and spin this plate and spin that plate, then you don't actually get anything valuable from any of it. You would have been better off getting a second job at Walmart going, here's your cart. And I see a lot of people doing that. And I think it's because people aren't willing to do the work. Like, so they tried this thing and it worked a little bit, but it didn't change their life. So instead of going, oh, I got a result, what does that result tell me? How do I now magnify that result? How do I increase that result? How do I make this do more? They go off and do something else. It's the person that every time they have a new idea, even though they have a very active presence, they create a new presence, like new website, new social media accounts, new everything. You're much better keeping it where you have the power, where that focus is. That's something I've even done that myself a couple of times. Like, I'm going to get this new domain or whatever, right? It's fine to like redirect somebody or verbal advertiser or whatever. But if you have a social media account with 60,000 people following you and you're going to start a new thing, don't go create a new one for it, right? Or at least leverage the one that you have to push the new one. And I see a lot of people not doing that. And I see what you're talking about too, John. People do, they have like five side hustles, but none of them make any real money.
They have
no, I love like, how this advice is like, literally I'm in the middle of cutting stuff because I did the plates thing. I'm literally undoing that right now. So
what's your big money maker?
The coffee and the podcast. And that's, you know, and we've had a lot of hard talks here in the last little while about like sauce needs to stop saucing in some areas.
And I think if we really looked at the numbers, the podcast doesn't make any money. The podcast drives and advertises. That's the advertisement for the coffee.
Yeah.
And the classes. Yeah.
The classes for sure. Yeah. Classes.
Yeah. So, and that's where like, it's taken me a bit to come back to. It is the podcast, but the other things have to also exist, but not all the other things, right?
Like the side hustle thing is for the dude that has a full-time job, works 40 hours, can't work any more than 40 hours, but needs 20 more hours of work, right? If you can start your thing and the goal is to grow that 20 hours so that you can stop doing the 40 hours. If you have your own business, you can work as much as you want. And for the most part, depending on what the business is, you can make as much money as you want. Mm-hmm. If you produce a product that you can sell and you produce all the product, you can work all weekend and you don't like, you just can't do that at work. But these people get stuck on that. Like my buddy Evan, Radio Made Easy, right? He started his company and his dad's like, well, what are you going to do for medical insurance? And I remember Evan said, you know, that when he first broke $100,000, the first time, or 60,000, he had his highest month. I think it was 60 grand, he said. And he told his dad, he was super excited, told his dad. His dad's like, yeah, but what about medical insurance? He's like, Dad. And you're like, people just get stuck in that. What if this? Yeah. What if that? Yeah. Man, if you can make $5,000 a week, you can make $5,000 every week. Most people aren't making five a month.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's a lot of times that's well-meaning concern because a person can't conceive of it. I know, like, I had a conversation with a relative one time back when I was in sales, and I just closed this deal, and he's like, well, how much is it going to make you? And I said, it's going to make me about $60,000. If it comes in at, like, the lowest margin possible, it's going to make me $45,000. He goes, you or the company? I'm like, no, me. And we were talking about a sports thing 5 minutes later because this guy worked really hard, went to college, had a good job. He was making about $60,000 a year at his job. And at the time, I was, like, 24 years old. And this was really hard for him to accept that a person could make that kind of money. So then they start getting risk adverse on your behalf. Well, what happens if you lose that? Well, I'm where I was before I had it, right?
Yeah, like, they're not like, concerned with you. They're worried about them not being willing to do what you do.
And therefore, there must be something wrong with what you're doing, because if it was worth doing, they would have done it. Especially when they're senior to you by 10, 15 years. Especially when you're that young, that really is a thing. But the thing with the side hustle is if you do it right and you get on it and you focus it, there will come a point where you will quit your job because you won't be able to justify keeping it. I mean, when I left, I had ownership. I had ownership in three companies. And my partner said, what can I do to get you not to do this? And I said, there's nothing that you like. Why would I keep pushing this string when I can go do this little thing all by myself and make plenty of money to take care of all the things I need to take care of, and I don't have to deal with this crap anymore?
And you like it, right?
Yeah, and he called me like 6 months after that, and he called me for advice, which is fine. Mm-hmm. But he was talking about some of the same problems that I had been there for, that I had tried to rectify, that other people got in the way of actually rectifying. And when I got done with the call, I had that kind of like icky feeling you get when you go through all that bullshit. And I remember I said to myself under my breath, I need to quit. And I went, fucker, you quit 6 months ago. This isn't your problem. All I did was advise my former partner, and I felt like I was inside that system with him again.
Yeah. So
if you create the right side hustle and you put laser focus on it and you build it up, you do need to make more money, profit, actual cash flow in that business than you do from your job for it to equal. You have to, because there is health insurance. There is your own matching taxes. Like, there's a whole shitload of expenses. However, once you get to where you are equalized by walking away, now you can grow unlimited to as much as you want. And then you got to decide how big you want to be.
Right. I don't and that's a lifestyle thing, right?
Like, I don't want a $12 million business. I don't. I that would require other people to be involved in, like, I'm good. I could retire today if I wanted to.
Other people besides Dorothy?
Huh?
Other people besides Dorothy?
Yeah, everything's besides Dorothy. And then she'd have to work, like, I don't know, 8 hours a week instead of two. Right?
Yeah.
Like, I don't want her to have to work more than that. All I want her to do is make sure all my appointments show up. That's it. That's all I want you to do. Schedule and send me emails to tell me you scheduled it. That's all I need you to do. Because I like, you know, I think it's also another thing, like the Gen X loner thing. I like to work alone. I don't want to be bothered with anybody else's shit. Like, and if I do give you something to do, I don't want to fucking say it again. I just want it to come back to me. I don't want you to explain what you did and why you did it. I wanted a result. You said you could do it. Give me the result or get the fuck out of here. And I know that's unreasonable. That's why I don't want to run a company with employees.
Right. So I like this comment from Scott King. I can and have made $5,000 a day. I have not figured out how to make it every day. Scott, make it once a week first.
Yeah.
How do you make it once a week? Because then you're making $5,000 a week. That's $20,000 a month. And then do it twice a week.
What's the product or service, Scott? Like, what do you do that made $5,000 that day? And can you consistently do it on a weekly basis?
Right. Yeah. And that, because it may be, and this is where I'm at with the coffee, right? Unless I build it in a way I don't want to, it has a cap.
Yeah.
And I am reexamining the I don't want to part, and can I get around it in a way that I'm comfortable with? And part of that is me addressing my own limiting beliefs, but also part of that is this is where it's going to be if that's what I'm doing. And am I happy with that? And if I'm not happy with that, what else am I doing? Or, you know.
I mean, you can sell your product to more people, or you can sell more products to the people you already have.
Those are
pretty much your two ways to grow revenue. You can lean out expenses, but you don't have that high of expenses to begin with, right? Like, if you're running a company with 500 people in it, I guarantee you, no matter how efficient you think that company is, if you could get me to consult, and I won't, but if you could, I could walk in there, spend a week walking around your company, and hand you a list at the end of those 2 weeks of people you can just fire. And you don't even have to do anything. Like, the flow would be the people that need to absorb the little bit those fuckers were doing will just do it. And you can give all the people that absorb shit a raise, and you could still save money. I guarantee you I can do that with any company of that size or larger. But when you have, you know, yourself and maybe a family member or like one or two little employees that work part time, you can only lean expense out so much.
So pulling my time out as the biggest expense, which I think that's always the biggest expense when you're running a business, what has changed in the last year is that my biggest expense in the coffee is no longer the green coffee beans. It is now shipping. So, which is, and even with the coffee going, like the raw coffee cost going parabolic.
Yeah.
In the last 12 months, shipping.
Is that just shipping rates going up, or you're shipping that much more?
No, it's per pound shipping. Like, I figure out what my per pound is. That's built into the price, right? Because you get free shipping if you get 2 pounds or more.
Yeah.
And that's been the thing.
So now you got to raise the price.
Right, which happens.
Yeah.
But that's something I'm looking at with interest at this point. Like, maybe that's where I push on it.
You should be profiting on your shipping.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you should be making a dollar on every order. It should be built in that you have money profit.
Right.
And anybody hearing that, it sounds absolutely crazy to them, but you can definitely negotiate with your carriers and such on that, and then, like, if you use ShipStation or Pirate Ship, there's an advantage on that. There's price advantage also.
Yeah.
And then packaging. There's a ton of money that we spend on packaging. But if you can ship U.S. mail service, they give you all of the contents for free. Everything that goes in the box and everything is free.
Yeah, he's the guy to talk to on that because he ships tons of shit, right? My solution to that is I try to sell things that don't have to go anywhere.
I try
to sell things that can move at the speed of light and be delivered instantaneously, because my profit margin on a $50 membership is insane. It cost me about $1.40 to deliver that product for a year, and I sell it for $50. And I like that approach, but it's not something everybody can do. Like, I saw a lot of people after I did it in our space try to do it and fail, and I think it's because you're creating an also-ran. Like, you have to do something unique with it to be effective, I feel. Like,
well, a lot of people like the idea of it, too, but they don't want to put in the effort and the work that you do to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the thing I found, John, when I did an assessment of how much time it takes to put things in the boxes and the flat rate fee versus purpose-built boxes versus shipping, you know, like buying the boxes, it's about 50 cents per package cheaper for me not to use flat rate, which isn't a lot, but it's a lot at volume. You know, like that starts adding up. So that's been a thing. And I do already use Pirate Ship, but now I'm wondering if I can, at my volume at this point, get a better rate than Pirate Ship.
Yeah, you gotta shop it.
Yeah, that's gonna be that's.
And then custom, like Uline will build any box you want, however you want it, and they'll generally have it to you tomorrow. Like we ordered from Uline Sunday night and had it here by 9 Monday morning.
That's cool. Now the other thing though is like John was saying about people will bitch because you're making a little bit of money on shipping. I would tell that person, bro. So does that mean that I can like have you come in and pack all my boxes for free?
So well, they're not aware of it. Like,
you know, they don't understand. Like, it actually takes effort. It takes energy, and anything in a business takes effort and energy is a cost. And one of the big problems people have when they're small, like solopreneurs are very small, is they do not put enough value on their own labor. And that's what Nicole's running into now, because the minute you have to pay somebody to do what you're doing, then you see the real cost. You know, and there's a good and bad about that. The good is that you can be very nimble and like, basically, you're working for that wage for yourself. But then if you want to get past that cap, now you gotta double your volume to hire one person to do what you did if you really want to be hands-off. Or you have to hire a lesser person that's going to still cost 75% of what it would cost to hire somebody who could do it all.
Billy Bond, what's up, man?
Wait, I don't see Billy.
Permapastures.
Oh,
there he is.
El Salvador. Oh, I turn off.
We're dueling.
Yeah, I connected him with somebody. He's like, well, I'm going to be unavailable in El Salvador for 2 weeks. And I'm like, I hope that's a vacation, Billy, and I hope you're having a good time with your wife. That's all I got to say.
Yeah. I'm waiting to hear from him when he gets back. What is El Salvador like today? Because
that's. I mean, I can't wait to hear that, too.
I've seen some pictures he posted. It looks pretty fucking nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, fresh food.
Yeah.
I've seen some pictures from him on X, and he it looks like a pretty nice place to be. Good for him.
Yeah, it's called shipping and handling, not just shipping. And you don't have to even disclose that, right? When I raise prices or creep prices up, if I need to raise a product, like I still have, I'll see an order in the morning and I'll be like, how in the world are we charging $15 for that? That thing needs to be $50, right?
Yeah.
That color didn't get changed or something.
Yeah.
I don't announce it. We just raise the price. And if I'm concerned with it, if I need the price to go up $15, I just raise it $5 every month. Like, we just creep the price up. We don't even tell people it happened. Nobody ever questions it.
That's interesting.
And we don't see a loss in revenue.
I totally stole that from you, John, because you're like, don't tell people when you raise the price. So I'm like, sometimes I will explain that coffee inputs are going up in my weekly email, but it's like the price on the website is the price it needs to be.
And I just feel like when people do that, we're raising our prices. They're looking for they need money.
Mm.
I think one thing a lot of small entrepreneurs don't understand is the pricing curve, where as you increase the price with certain guidelines, the volume you sell actually goes up.
Yeah.
Because the product has higher perceived value.
Perception.
So if I told you I was going to sell you a brand new car for $100, you'd be like, it's a scam. To put the extreme version of, I got a brand new, you know, Mustang sitting out there and I'll sell it to you for $100. Like, bullshit, you lie. So as you increase that, it goes up and then it peaks on that bell curve, like everything's a bell curve, and it starts to come back down and then it drops off. You go way too high. It's counterintuitive, but you're much better off pricing on the backside of the bell curve where the purchases actually drop a little bit, but the margin per sale goes up. Because
why?
The first people that bail on the other side of that curve are the fucking pain in the ass customers. Yep. They're the customer that will walk across the street for $5 and you don't, every second you spend trying to make that person happy, you'll never make happy. You're not spending on the core of your business and the people that love your product that are like, I'll pay a little more for it because I don't want it to go away.
Yep. Yeah, 10% of your customers take 80% of your time, those problematic people. We were talking about that on the live last night. There's a company called Mission Knives. They make a titanium knife that was used by the SEALs and EOD guys because it's a low magnetic signature for IEDs and stuff. And the company in the 90s, mid-90s, were selling this knife at like $195. And the market just never went anywhere. The product was great. The Navy was buying them. And they hired this guy, I think it was Jim Bonus, Coca-Cola advertising guy. They did this market research for about 6 months, and they came back and they said, you got to lower the price of the knife to $95, or you have to raise it to $295. One of the two, because you're in this weird area. So if you raise the price, they will perceive this knife to be worth more. They did, and they 10x the company in 6 months by raising the price of the knife $100.
And they probably sold half the knives, but they doubled the revenue or something
sold,
like that.
They sold way more knives. Yeah, they are huge. I know the people that own the company now.
Yeah.
They're actually here in Tennessee now.
Huh.
Yep.
That's cool. That's true with events too, by the way.
Yeah, that's how I buy electronics. Like I go in when I needed a VCR, right? I'm never gonna set the clock. I'm never gonna copy any shit. I just need to watch a videotape. But what do I get for $100? What do I get for $200? What do I get for $300? And you always buy the better one because you perceive it to be better.
Yeah. I mean, since my business is so lightweight on product delivery, I've raised the price in 18 years of nothing except my events. And I've raised it in my events because, one, there's a hard fixed cost on the other end of it, but two, I don't want the experience to drop. So if I was charging what I started charging for events 12 years ago, I couldn't deliver what people have come to expect at one of my events. I have to charge more so that people are eating smoked freaking brisket or, you know, beef chuck or something. So I'm not feeding them freaking like freaking pasta, right? Like cheap macaroni or some shit. Cause I don't want to do that. So there's times when you raise the price, not just to make more money, but so that you can actually deliver what the customer deserves. And a customer doesn't understand that as a customer you don't want. Like, I know that sounds asshole-ish or something, but it isn't. Like, do you think the people that sell Porsches give a fuck that you can buy a Caprice for less? No, because they sell Porsches to people that want Porsches.
People fly in.
Do you remember back in, like, it was like the 70s, they interviewed the president of Ferrari, and they said, we noticed you don't advertise on television. He goes, of course we don't. People that buy Ferraris don't watch television.
Yep.
And if they do, they certainly don't make purchasing decisions because they watched it on television. Like, you have to know your market. And
you have to already be an owner to buy the new models. Like, you have to already have one to be invited to buy them.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm saying more for everybody else. You got to think that way. Like, who is your product? Who is your product for? Who do you serve? And what do they expect? And what do you have to do to serve them the way they expect so that they will reward you sufficiently that you can keep doing it and prosper? And if you have customers that don't want you to prosper, get new customers. Like, I mean, your customers, we're not talking about like Microsoft here or something or Apple. Like these are, you know, multi-billion dollar corporations that are seen as soulless. You're talking like if somebody's listening to this and you're running a business, even though John's business is very large, if you just measure it raw dollars, but yet, you know, John, you know, Amanda, you know, people that work for him, you have that kind of first name recognition. If you don't want SOE Tactical Gear to do well, and all you care about is getting shit as cheap as you can, you're not worthy of SOE Tactical's gear. You don't qualify for it because that's not what it's for. Then you need to go buy some Chinese bullshit off Amazon because that's what you qualify for, because that's how everything works, whether people like it or not. Like, you get what you're willing to sacrifice enough to acquire. And shit that is better quality generally costs more money because it takes more to build. It takes more to create. It takes more to develop. And the more you develop it with, like, one person's hands, it's hand – like, your shit is hand-sewn. It might not be by you personally, but it's somebody you've trained and you have oversight on. You don't have, like, a fucking machine in there just ripping shit off and, like – mass producing it with a fucking robot, and if you did, it would never be the quality of what you built.
Yeah, it's not Memorex. I mean, we make a video every week showing you how to build and copy my product, start to finish. So you know exactly what it takes.
Yeah, because no one's going to do it anyway. Yeah, that's – I don't want to tell people how I do it because they'll do – no, they won't. No, they won't. And that person that's going to do it, they're not going to buy from you anyway. They're the person, the DIY person. Let them go do it if they want to.
Yeah.
We're over 2 hours. You want to –
yeah, let's wrap.
All right.
We got shit to do, guys.
I do have shit to do. I got to get ready to go to see Nicole.
I'm finishing my taxes today.
Yeah, I got that's on my radar too.
I'm like the rest of all. I've like done the big part, but I'm like I have two more things to do that until it's done, I'm just gonna do it. So it's not anything I have to think of. But all right, John, you wanna talk first?
SOETacticalgear.com or Retard Tactical. I own that and it redirects. I like to rage people that are soft and delicate, so Retard Tactical, check that out. I don't know if it redirects, but it should. SOE Tactical Gear, we build nylon tactical gear. We put out shirts every week. Some of them are political, some of them are not. I do a live every night at 9 o'clock. Jump on. We can talk about whatever you want unless you disagree with me because I'm always right. Not really, but jump on. We just have a conversation. Show the product. Show that we actually, well, all of our Chinese people are asleep under the machines. We don't let you see those people, but you see the factory in the shop and just jump on. I've got 75, probably approaching 8,000 videos on YouTube, and I do like, I don't know, 3 or 4 video series every week. So if you don't like one of them, I'm sure there's something you will like.
I think my favorite John Willis nighttime live stream comment that I see on the regular is, what is this, a sweatshop?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like, well, nobody's working right now. Yeah. So yeah. His air conditioning is great.
It's the coldest, brightest sweatshop in the world.
Yeah. So, okay, Jack, what do you got?
Oh, I am Jack Spierko, host of the Survival Podcast, about 18 years running now, 3,800 plus episodes available at thesurvivalpodcast.com, where we talk about all types of things like we talked about today, from basic preparedness to lifestyle design, entrepreneurship, and more. So come by and check us out if you are not yet listening to my show.
All right. I'm Nicole Soss from the Living Free in Tennessee podcast, and we do classes in this beautiful kitchen. I have one coming up March 14th, Making Bacon. It is a 2-hour class from 10 to 12 here in Lancaster, Tennessee, 1 hour east of Nashville. There are only a few tickets for this. And if you want to grab one, $73, livingfreeintennessee.com. Just scroll down and go to events. You'll find it there. Guys, we'll see you next week.
Hey, one last thing. Here's something I thought was funny. One last thing. Muslim countries that support today's U.S. strikes on Iran. Kuwait, Saudi Arabia, Qatar, Turkey, UAE, Bahrain. Muslim countries that do not support today's strikes on Iran. France and the United Kingdom.
Don't forget Canada.
Canada.
All right. We'll see you in a month, guys. Can't wait. Are they gonna bail you out or just run you around? They said you should have a house the American way. $1 down, $1 a month, and you never have to pay.